The market doesn't joke around, so why would you? Get serious. Choose Tastytrade. Tastytrade gives you the tools you need to make smarter moves. Dig into data with advanced charting, track profit accurately with order chain trackers, see risk clearly with curve analysis, and trade with low-capped commissions, stocks, options, futures, and more. All on one platform. No wonder serious traders choose Tastytrade. Join the club, genius. Tastytrade Inc. is a registered broker-dealer and member of FINRA and SIPC.
Bring in show music, please.
This is Squawk Pod. I'm CNBC producer Cameron Costa. Today on our podcast, Pfizer out with some good news for kids. CNBC's Meg Terrell reports.
In this clinical trial, it saw that immune responses in kids 5 to 11 are robust in terms of the antibody levels and comparable to those of people 16 to 25.
New York City's mayoral nominee Eric Adams sets his priorities for the Big Apple, from classrooms to subways and all the streets in between.
The prerequisite to prosperity and growth is public safety and justice. We can have both together. My city is going to be safe to be here.
Those stories, plus the estate tax making a comeback, and with it, some big gifts among friends. CNBC's Robert Frank.
There is one important thing that everyone should do right now before the end of the year to get ahead of whatever happens at the estate tax, and that is to maximize your gift tax exemptions.
It's Monday, September 20th, 2021. Squawk Pod begins right now.
Stand Becky by in 3, 2, 1, cue, please.
Good morning. Welcome to Squawk Box here on CNBC. I'm Becky Quick, along with Joe Kernan and Andrew Ross Sorkin, and we are watching the markets very closely this morning because there's a lot of red everywhere. And this is kind of contagion kicking in, as we saw markets off very steeply in Asia. The Hang Seng was off there, and then also that's spreading through to Europe. Other concerns that are out there, the debt ceiling in the United States, that's just a couple of weeks away with no real agreement from the two sides on how to move forward, and the idea that Senator Joe Manchin is now talking about pushing off a vote for the big spending bill from the administration until next year. So a lot of things circling right now, and you're going to see that playing out right now in the markets. It's also getting closer to October. September 17th was the date that over the last 20 years Cramer's been talking about, that day is when you really saw a turning point, and that could be the case because that was Friday. We've seen a big broad sell-off in cryptocurrency, too. It's been pretty closely linked to the markets for a while, and you can see that's the case. Bitcoin's off by 5.6%, but you've got Dogecoin down by close to 8%, and Litecoin's off by 6%. All of these names really under quite a bit of pressure with Ripple there, too.
Yeah, we need an NFT something, like a composite NFT thing. Bitcoin got as low as 44. It was down 6% at one point. Our friend Kevin Rudd, that we have on a lot, Beck and Andrew, his piece today, trying to explain what President Xi is, what his motivation is for the what we've seen, just sort of a rotation from sector to sector of reform of that. He thinks it has to do with getting a third term. But he's also, Kevin Rudd, saying that President Xi better think about the long-term effects of what he's doing, because getting his, you know, his own interests are at the expense, perhaps, of the economy, which he wants to do well. He wants to make China the richest place on earth, and it could be a problem. So I'm not saying that China is going to cause an Evergrande today, right. And I'm not saying it's going to cause a bear market in global markets, Becky and Andrew.
This is all just a
But if it is, if there is a bear market, I can't believe no one's thought about this. Here would be a symbol for the bear market.
Oh boy. A specific type of bear you're talking about.
I just think you should sell it as an NFT.
How come no one thought about the next bear market could be China related? And he gets very angry, and I guess people think he has a resemblance to that great cartoon character, and he's very sensitive about it. We've had some issues in the past, but if we need a bear market symbol, I think that may end up being what.
There's your NFT.
We're looking for. What finally causes
ape?
Some...
How much would you pay for that?
I like that one. That's a good one.
But to your point, we've been waiting to see what kind of pokes a hole in the bubble.
Right, exactly.
You know, what lets some of the air out of this, because we've had worry after worry, that wall of worry that the market's climbed. Maybe this is the one thing that makes everybody say, okay, this is too much. And by the way, all of those other concerns that we've been ignoring, maybe we'll pay a little more attention to them.
You know, though, we've got our, I don't know if we import a real break in the market from China, because we can exist. We've seen in the
right.
past. They're
I
not.
Don't know if this is
we
do
have
it,
domestically, we're very strong, but we've got our own issues with. I think maybe it's because some of these Fed guys are finally getting out of the market.
Maybe they just have good timing.
If they're out of the market, they're no longer going to support the. No,
I don't think that's it.
Some breaking news on the vaccine front. Meg Terrell joins us with more on this. And Meg, this is some news that a lot of people have been very eagerly awaiting.
Pfizer reporting the first results for its vaccine for kids ages 5 to 11, reporting that in this clinical trial, it saw that immune responses in kids 5 to 11 are robust in terms of the antibody levels and comparable to those of people 16 to 25 in previous studies. They also said the vaccine appeared to be well tolerated with also side effects similar to what they saw in that older age group. And they plan to file for emergency use authorization in kids ages 5 to 11, quote, as soon as possible. Now, this was a study that included about 2,270 kids, and they tested a dose that was one-third the amount that people over the age of 12 get. So it's 10 micrograms given 3 weeks apart, two doses of that. So that's a third of the adult dose. So guys, these are some of the results that parents of younger kids have been waiting for. They do anticipate getting results in even younger children sometime before the end of the year, perhaps in about a month. As for right now, the first results we're seeing in kids down to age 5, and they look pretty similar to what we've seen in older people. We don't yet have enough cases for them to report the efficacy, but in terms of the immune response, looking pretty good. Guys?
Meg, what happens next? I mean, we know the timeline. Is this maybe 3 weeks it will take the FDA? What are we still thinking? Halloween is when kids might actually get vaccinated? And what does that mean just in terms of logistics, how these new vials will be rolled out and where?
Yeah, so there are a few things that have to happen before we get this vaccine out and available to folks. First is that Pfizer has to file with regulators, and so it's preparing to do that. We don't know exactly how long that will take. They had signaled that could probably happen in early October. And then the question from there is, how long will it take regulators to review this? Dr. Scott Gottlieb, former FDA commissioner on the board of Pfizer, has suggested it might take 4 to 6 weeks. We have seen some reporting from Reuters citing U.S. health officials saying it could be even shorter, 3 weeks. And we know that it's very urgent right now for kids, because the case numbers we are seeing are higher than ever in terms of the proportion they're making up in this pandemic. About 26% of overall cases in early September were from kids. That compares to about 16% that we've seen for the entire pandemic. Hospitalizations also at record. So there is an urgent situation here, but it will be a few weeks. We have to see Pfizer file, and then we have to see how long the FDA takes to review.
Kind of interesting that the dosage, the way that works. We know about baby aspirin and stuff like that, but I would always think that's sort of weight related, body, you know, size related. So this is kind of interesting. They got great immune systems that, you know, we're envious, obviously, the older you get of the kids' immune system. So you get the same response with a much lower dosage, which if you can do it, it's probably good. I guess whenever you can use less, it's probably better. But what did you say it was, Meg? It was, and this was Pfizer, because Moderna is already higher than Pfizer for adults, right? So I wonder how you would dose Moderna for kids.
Yeah, we're going to have to see that, what Moderna ends up doing. But they do have for adults three times the dose. They have 100 micrograms for Moderna for adults.
Which seems to work better longer, right? Moderna, there's some...
In adults, yes, they have been. There is some emerging data suggesting that. Yeah, and it's not clear if it's because there's a higher dose or because there's an extra week spacing between those doses. But for kids, it's fascinating. I mean, Pfizer is testing one-third the dose for kids down to 5 and one-tenth the dose for even younger kids. And you're just seeing these immune responses that are really comparable with what people 16 to 25 are getting with that higher dose.
By the way, in terms of timing for other vaccine makers, including Moderna and J&J for kids, what are you expecting in terms of timeline?
Yeah, we know that they're in these trials. Moderna has not put quite as concrete timelines on things as we've heard from Pfizer. So we are expecting to see those at some point over the coming months. They're still waiting for the FDA to act on their application for down to age 12. Because the Pfizer vaccine is available, there's not quite as much urgency there to approve another or authorize another vaccine for that age group. But Moderna will be coming behind, and Johnson & Johnson is also in pediatric trials. So these will start rolling out, but Pfizer, once again, in the lead with its results.
So what if I wanted to be a good citizen and try to help myself with a booster, which I'm in line to get? I didn't have Pfizer. I had Moderna. So what am I supposed to do? You gotta go get a Pfizer?
Yeah, of right now, the booster is only authorized for people who got Pfizer, most likely. We're going to see how this plays out this week for whom the FDA clears it, because they still need to. That was just an advisory vote on Friday. And then Wednesday and Thursday this week, CDC's advisors are going to meet to actually make those clinical recommendations. But right now, we've only seen the Pfizer booster get evaluated, and there aren't data from the U.S. on mixing and matching vaccines.
Yeah,
and so most
mix.
Likely the recommendation is going to be just for Pfizer folks.
But the truth is, Moderna is doing so well, I thought.
Maybe I don't need it.
That you may not need it.
Fewer breakthrough cases, but they don't know if that's because most of the older people in this country got Pfizer because it was approved first, if that skews the data, and got it earlier.
After getting whittled down and weakened for years, the estate tax makes a comeback in the latest House plan. Robert Frank joins us now with more. Robert, good morning.
Good morning, Joe. Fewer than 2,000 people actually paid estate taxes in 2020. Only raised about $16 billion in revenue. That's down 50% from a year ago. Now, the main reason is the exemption, which is now $11.7 million per person. That means estates worth less than that go untaxed. But it's also because the estate planning industry has found and created massive loopholes. The House now aiming to close those. The House plan would cut the exemption by more than half to $6 million. It also effectively ends what are called grantor trusts. These have become kind of this secret sauce for estate plans. They allow business owners to create a trust that they own and control, but is separate from the estate for tax purposes. The House plan would force new trusts to be part of the estate. Now, for the investors, the most important change to the estate tax proposed is the so-called discount planning. Now, this allows investors to place a portfolio of stocks or financial assets into a partnership. They can then gift it out in pieces to family members, each piece then gets discounted for tax purposes by up to a third because it is a non-controlling stake. Now, the IRS, not surprisingly, has tried for years to challenge this. The House plan would finally ban it. Now, the Tax Foundation saying all these changes together would raise an additional $65 billion over the first 4 years. Joe?
I was listening closely. The second to die insurance, whole life insurance. That's not affected here. That's not something that seems like you're sort of making an investment long term that just builds up a certain cash balance to help pay for estate taxes. So that's not a loophole per se. That's just preparation, is it not?
Right. But there are changes in this, and they're far too complicated to get into. But there are changes in the House plan to the whole life insurance application to estate planning. And remember, this is all sort of in lieu of the president's plan. The president wanted to get rid of the step up in basis and tax gains, tax appreciated gains upon death. The House did not include that. So because of that, and for revenue and sort of progressive politics reasons, they had to include something. So the president didn't really touch the estate tax. The House then had to beef it up. And that's why, you know, the insurance loophole, GRATS, all these trusts that have been sort of a key part of estate planning for years are now sort of under pressure. We'll see where the Senate comes out and whether any of this actually happens.
You think that the Senate parliamentarian that made the decision about, that in this case it had to do with immigration, do you think that has Democrats maybe raised an eyebrow that she's going to watch some other things that we try to slip in here and that they might not pass muster as well? Or do you think that this is the only thing that she would challenge? I don't know. I don't know how to handicap it. Are you hearing scuttlebutt about that, Robert?
No, I mean, that's a question for Elon and our Washington folks. But what's interesting about these tax plan is that the president's plan, the House plan, there are big differences there, not just in the corporate tax, but in the capital gains treatment, the estate tax. And on the Senate side, we haven't heard from the Senate. So in addition to what Joe Manchin is sort of rumored to be saying now about putting all this off till next year, a lot in the air right now.
Robert, for those out there who have constructed trusts like the ones you've described, does this undo them or does this prevent new ones from being created like that?
Asking for a friend, right? Yeah. So it basically.
I can't laugh. That's a question that everybody who even knows what this even what you're even talking about
busted,
is asking.
Busted.
100%. 100%, Andrew. This is an important question. So you have basically until the end of the year to create these trusts. After that, it's the new trust that will be affected. But there is one important thing that everyone should do right now before the end of the year to get ahead of whatever happens at the estate tax, and that is to maximize your gift tax exemption. So right now, you can give away up to $11.7 million to friends and family until the end of the year if this changes. So what everyone is telling smart clients is give the maximum. Give up to $11.7 million if right. You're lucky enough to have
okay,
that kind of money.
Asking for a friend. Now the conversation's moved beyond, unfortunately.
Yeah, all right. I'll do that. I'm going to do that.
Thank you.
I'm going to do that today with that 11.7.
Robert,
I'm doing that. I'm going to call my guy right now.
Andrew?
No, mine.
I'm giving you guys all checks.
Right. Mine, I have a second to die, but I'm not doing loopholes. I'm doing just totally like normal stuff.
Yeah.
You know
it's
what
just
I'm
like
saying?
When we talk to
Gottlieb. That's what you're calling
you
it?
My
okay.
Question.
No, second to die is just, that's Robert. That's just preparing, right?
Just
right,
preparation.
Robert, that's like not finagling. All right. Thank you. Becky's just burst out laughing.
I know.
And I wasn't paying attention.
I originally thought that Robert burst out laughing because I couldn't see, but now I understand what's happening here.
Coming up on Squawk Pod, NYC mayoral nominee Eric Adams on crime, business, and of course, taxes.
We're dysfunctional as a city. We create our crises, and those tax dollars are being wasted. I say, let's make sure we get our house in order through our agencies, and then let's talk about how much money we need to run this city.
We'll be right back.
At the UPS store, we know things can get busy this upcoming holiday. You can count on us to be open and ready to help with any packing and shipping or anything else you might need.
Is there anything you can't do?
Actually, I don't have a good singing voice. The UPS... Nope. But our certified packing experts can pack and ship just about anything.
At least that's good.
The UPS store. Be unstoppable. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. Come in today to get your holiday goodies there on time.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration. Our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
This is Squawk Pod, today with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin. Andrew is on the terrace of the NASDAQ, just a few floors above a bustling Times Square.
New York City Democratic mayoral nominee Eric Adams is on a mission to reset the city's relationship with business. At last week's SALT conference, he said, quote, New York will no longer be anti-business, and outlined a plan to work with Wall Street to fill job openings with New York City residents and try to reskill the workforce. Eric Adams joins us this morning now on the NASDAQ terrace. It is great to see you.
As well. Good seeing you.
I can't call you Mr. Mayor just yet, but it appears to be on track to do that. But let's talk about the reset of this city, but also the reset with business, because over the past couple of years, as you know, the relationship between business and this city and this the current mayor has been, let's say, politely challenged. How are you approaching this differently?
Well, think about this for a moment. We are the only country on the globe that we have dream attached to our name. You don't have a French dream, a German dream. You have an American dream. We are hardwired to start a business and hope from going from the mailroom to owning a business. We've lost that along the way. And so I have been spending the last few years talking to my business leaders and stating, if I'm fortunate enough to become mayor, we're going to hit reset and we're going to establish that relationship.
We've heard a lot during COVID about people leaving the city, businesses leaving the city, people moving to Florida, moving to different jurisdictions where the taxes are lower and the like. How do you bring those people back?
You know, what's fascinating is that everyone talks about the number of people who are leaving, but they don't look at the subtext going to the crevices. I actually talk to the people who are leaving from different sectors. They say the same thing. Eric, my city is not safe. I'm paying my taxes, but I'm receiving a dysfunctional product.
Right.
The prerequisite to prosperity and growth is public safety and justice. We can have them both together. My city is going to be safe to be here.
Let's talk about that safety issue, though, because there has been lots of questions about how you balance these issues of safety and justice and all of these types of things at the same time that you're trying to balance, trying to bring business back.
Right. And what happened, we often go to one extreme or the other. Either we tell our police officers, fall back, don't do your job, or you go heavy handed.
Right.
No. Just as I'm doing reset with businesses, I'm doing reset with my police department. I'm telling them this is a new day. The bad guys are watching the good guys squabble with each other.
Right.
I'm going to have the backs of my officers, but at the same time, I'm telling those who are in my department, policing is a noble profession. If you can't keep up with that nobility, you're not going to be in my department.
How much is it a difference between leadership in the policing space right now and some of the laws that have changed over the past 2 and 3 years that have changed the incentive system and structure of policing?
A great question. Great. We have to look, you know, we've never looked at the ecosystem of public safety in our country, not only New York. We have to look at that ecosystem. We dropped everything on the police officer. I say no to that. Let's bring in our mental health professionals, our crisis management team. But at the same time, we have to watch what we're doing on the state level and the federal level. That first round of bail reform was a killer. We had robbery on the list. We had burglary on the list. We went back and reexamined that, and that was important. We have to keep making sure we're not going to the extreme, because you can't keep a city safe based on sound bites. It's based on good, sound policies.
I got another question for you, and I want to bring Becky in just a moment, but I have a tax question. AOC, who also represents New York to some degree, or more than to some degree, she's an elected official, wore a dress last week that said tax the rich. Do you subscribe to that policy?
What we must do, and I'm a big believer that, you know, I think AOC and I believe I, we both want the same things. We just have different pathways to get there. Her mother was a domestic worker or did things in that level. So was my mother. But when you talk about just blanketly saying tax the rich, in this city, we may have 8.8 million people, but 65,000 pay 51% of our income taxes. And if you say to those 65,000 to leave, then we're not going to have the firefighter, the teacher, all of those basic things. No, let's find a way to use the tax dollars. We're wasting tax dollars. We're dysfunctional as a city. We create our crises, and those tax dollars are being wasted. I say, let's make sure we get our house in order through our agencies, and then let's talk about how much money we need to run this city.
Right.
We have a $98 billion budget. Think about that for a moment. And how much of that are we hemorrhaging? I say no. Let's do a proper analysis and make the real decision based on what we have in front of us.
Becky's got a question for you. Bex?
How are you?
Good. Thanks for being with us today. Just back to some of the problems with crime in the city. When I talk to New York City police officers, they tell me part of the big problem has been the criminal reform laws that were passed by the state. And that it's really frustrating that you arrest somebody and they're back out on the streets a day or two later. It's demoralizing. Those are things that are done at the state level. What can you do to try and work within the bounds of that?
And it's a combination of things. You know, number one, some of the bail reform laws were wrong. But there's something else that's happening that a lot of people are not recognizing. Our judges are not giving bail on cases that they actually can give bail on. And they're also not looking at Kendra's law. This is the law that allows the judge to really compel someone to take medication. That's the mental health crises we're seeing on our public transportation system and in the streets. And third, I never want to reach a day that my police officers are going to stay because of what happens in Albany. They're not going to protect our public. I've been frustrated as a police officer on what I witness in Albany and on a federal level. When I put on that uniform, the public comes first, and we must always have that mindset.
Joe?
Yeah, thanks, Aaron. Mr. Mayor nominee, I'm trying to figure that out, too. What about Captain? I don't know. Do you anyone call you Captain anymore? Anyway, Mr. Merrill nominee, Adams, I want to ask you about how we approach the schools, the public schools, the charter schools, the private schools. I know you've seen the progress that Harlem Children's Zone has made, and I'm not sure that the current administration, I guess, I'm already last. I'm trying to hurry things up, but I don't think that the charter schools really felt like they had their day in the sun for a while now. How will you approach the whole issue? It's so important, obviously, to our kids in New York City.
Well, you know, think about it for a moment. And when you started out, you were on the right road. You started mentioning the different types of school. I am not engaged in a dialogue between charter schools, public schools, parochial schools. I don't listen to that. I engage in a dialogue of children. 65% of black and brown children don't meet proficiency in the Department of Education. 40% don't meet proficiency in charter schools. They're both failing my children. Our school system is dysfunctional, and we have to stop acting like it is not. We have to sometimes call a thing a thing, and we have to be honest about the basic essentials. So I'm going to embrace scaling up excellence. I'm going to look at my charter schools and see some of the good product that they're doing. I'm going to look at my district schools, like Bedford Academy. We're going to start scaling up excellence and not get into this adult dialogue of the name or the type of schools. Who is doing a good job educating our children? If you don't educate, you're going to incarcerate. That's why 80% of the men and women at Rikers Island don't have a high school diploma or an equivalency diploma.
Eric, what are you thinking right now about public transportation and how much, and I'm thinking about the MTA, subways, getting people to work every day,
right,
back
right,
and forth.
Right.
What you can do, what the city can do, relative to what the state can do.
Well, you know, my relationship in Albany is so important right now. I'm a former state senator. I chaired, you know, various committees in Albany. And when you look at it, if we don't get people back into the subway system, our economy is not going to turn around. And why aren't they getting there? You talk to the average employee, they're saying we're afraid. We have to deploy our police better. I don't know when the last time you've been on the subway. I don't want to see five police officers hanging around a token booth like they're afraid. You got to get on the trains. I was a transit cop. I rode the trains by myself without road radios that operated. So it's about making sure the system is safe so people can get back in the system. And safety is not only actual, it's perceived.
Right.
The perception is of fear. Get the homelessness out. Give them the services they deserve. And let's have a safe, affordable, reliable transportation system.
And then one of the things I know you're thinking a lot about is trying to match up people who don't have jobs right now with jobs and also reskilling. What do you think needs to happen in this city specifically?
Well, you know, we have a 10.2 unemployment rate, double the national average. Nationally, I think 90% of the jobs return. Here, we only have about 49% of the jobs return pre-COVID. The real problem is those who are seeking jobs are not connected to those who are looking for employees. We should have a central platform, one application for any job seeker in the city, matched to a central database of all the jobs that are available. Then we can match them up, and at the same time, we can see where we're having skills issues. We don't have an employment issue in the city. We have a skill issue, and we have to scale up the skills.
Eric Adams, we appreciate you being with us. We look forward and hope that you'll be back here, and we'll be talking a lot more about business in this city.
I like squawking.
Over the next couple of years. We appreciate it. We love you squawking. Thank you.
Squawk Pod will be right back.
At the UPS Store, we know things can get busy this upcoming holiday. You can count on us to be open and ready to help with any packing and shipping or anything else you might need.
Is there anything you can't do?
Actually, I don't have a good singing voice. The UPS... Nope. But our certified packing experts can pack and ship just about anything.
At least that's good.
The UPS Store. Be unstoppable. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. Come in today to get your holiday goodies there on time.
That's the show for today. Thank you so much for listening. Squawk Box is hosted by Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin weekday mornings on CNBC at 6 a.m. Eastern. To get the smartest takes and analysis from our TV show right into your ears, listen and follow Squawk Pod wherever you get your podcasts. We'll meet you back here tomorrow.
Now we are clear. Thanks, guys.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.